Hi, this is Andrew Poole with LaCourse Poole & Enval. Thanks for tuning into the Trainwreck Court podcast. Each week, we will post a new episode hosted by me, attorney Andrew Poole. Stay tuned for compelling local and national court cases each week. LaCourse Poole & Enval, experienced legal professionals helping our Northland neighbors for over 35 years. Our success is no accident. Find us online at northlandlawyers.com.
And welcome back, everybody. We are back in the studio for another fantastic episode of Trainwreck Court. Attorney Andrew Poole, Tom Robick, and myself, Kevin Keyes. So hope everyone's doing well. And big case, and at the time of this recording, this case just wrapped up today. Conviction came through. Of course, we're talking about, everyone's pretty much heard about this case as of right now, attorney Alex Murdaugh. And is that how you say his last name?
You know, I was just actually looking at that. I believe it is Murdaugh. Asking that question in my head. Yeah, I think it is.
It's spelled Murdaugh, but if you watch Murdaugh? 2020 or Dateline or anything, they kind of like say Murdaugh or
it's
something.
Like it's one of these things everyone kind of says it real quick.
I just don't know if it's the Southern accent or what, but anyway.
Murdaugh.
But yeah, he was convicted for the murder of his wife and son.
Yeah,
just
and
today.
I'll try not to have this podcast seem pretty scattered, but as I was, you know, trying to get a handle on what actually happened here. It seems to be a pretty scattered story.
It's pronounced Murdaugh.
That's Murdaugh.
Even though it's spelled Murdaugh.
Alec Murdaugh.
Yeah.
It's D-A-U-G-H, so, yep. But Murdaugh. Okay,
Murdaugh.
Whatever. All right.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like just a collection of events. Are they related or some, I don't know.
Well,
they all evidence his guilt? And we'll walk through it. We'll talk about it.
Have you first had the chance to watch the two-part Netflix special?
It's on this?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
It's pretty good, but my reaction, all I could sit there and think was drunk, rich, stupid, and mean. And that is the reaction
drunk,
I got.
Rich,
I got
stupid.
That is
yeah,
the, especially,
I mean that,
especially, the, I mean, you know,
right,
I mean, I'm sorry the son was murdered,
it's
but
almost
I mean,
like a,
that kid was bad news.
It's like a real bad episode of Better Call Saul or Breaking Bad or
kinda.
Something, you know, like it's very strange. Kinda. So this Murdaugh, right?
All right.
Murdaugh.
We got it.
Alex Murdaugh. Apparently this has been a name in the legal community for pretty much ever. You know, every state I feel like has their own dynasties. I could name a few here in Minnesota. I won't only because we're talking about something terrible and there's nothing terrible with the ones in Minnesota, but everyone knows these local names. Every state has them. And apparently this is just one of those names in South Carolina. That's the sense I get at least. I should ask, you know, I'm still, for the time being, a judge advocate in the Army Reserves.
Okay.
And I say still because I now have a document confirming my 20 good years of service. I'll be retiring shortly. But one of my colleagues is a practicing attorney, I think, in South Carolina.
Really?
So I should ask him next time I see him about Alex Murdaugh.
They probably have crossed paths
what his
at some
view
point.
Is of that name. But that's a name that is pretty deep-seated in the South Carolina legal community.
Yeah.
This is, consider this. It's not that his father was an attorney,
mm-hmm.
but his grandfather and his great-grandfather. We're talking like over 100 years of the practice of law with the name Murdaugh, and he's, you know, kind of the beneficiary of that name in goodwill.
And he did
how many,
well with
one,
it.
One, two, three, what, a fourth generation, right? Don't they usually say the wheels kind of come off the spokes at the third generation of nepotism?
Well, I've heard that too, but
where am I at? You know, oh, yeah, that
so,
makes
I mean,
sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I really went off the wheels this time, unfortunately. His father, his grandfather, great-grandfather, they're all, it sounds like, career prosecutors. That's what they did. Prosecutors, decades worth of legal practice in a very wide area covering the state. Alex Murdaugh, he himself, I don't think, was ever a prosecutor to the extent his father, grandfather, and great-grandfather was. It sounds like he was affiliated with local prosecuting authority and maybe did some volunteer work for him, but was in private practice, right? He was in private practice, had law partners. If you followed this trial at all, you maybe saw or heard or read about the testimony of one of his former law partners who was going on about how he had lost significant sums of money because of Alex Murdaugh, and we could talk about that.
Embezzled it.
Embezzlement, money from the firm, from clients.
Millions.
Millions of dollars, right? But where this all really starts to, well, I think where the story, at least from our perspective, starts is June 7th of 2021. It's that evening, a call was placed to 911 by Alex Murdaugh reporting that his wife and one of their sons had been shot to death.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's where this starts. And obviously that's kickoff for a mystery story that, you know, developed over a span of months, if not longer than that. I think in excess of a year passed without a suspect and without a motive identified. So we go from 2000 all the way into, 2021 to 2022. This is just an unsolved thing. He's still out and about doing Alex Murdoch stuff.
Yep.
He has a surviving son, but again, one of his sons was murdered in this incident, as well as his wife. And then on July 14 of 2022, so last summer, Mr. Murdoch is indicted on two counts of murder, with the authorities saying he fatally shot his wife with a rifle, and then they allege, killed his son with a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
He was jailed then starting in October of 2021, where he was actually first charged with stealing from a former client. Okay, yeah, I'm trying to get this all
straight. There's a lot of pieces to this.
So 2021, so he had been jailed since then. So 2022 is the indictment for the murder of his son and his wife. 2021, he's jailed for stealing from clients and stealing from, I suppose, his firm to the tune of $8.8 million. Regarding the murders, of course, he maintained his innocence during the entire time. His statement at the time of the indictment was that he looked forward to the opportunity to clear his name.
Well, he's a lawyer. He knows what to say.
The trial started January 23rd. As you know, we now have a verdict. He was convicted very quickly, and we can talk about that towards
the end of his innocence.
Still maintaining his innocence. So, I mean, that's the nuts and bolts, the down and dirty of it. Now, here I think is maybe a more detailed description of what happened or didn't happen at these murders. Mr. Murdoch had been home with his wife and son earlier on that day. I think that day we're talking the June date of 2021, the day they died, right? Phone records apparently indicate that he left to visit his mother at 9 p.m. It's pretty late. How old is he?
Who has dementia, by the way.
He's got dementia, so 9 p.m. Yeah, so maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Maybe mom can't even confirm that alibi, but returned to his home, he says, later on. And at that point, it's when he noticed around the kennels, the dog kennels. Okay, you hear these dog kennels. Apparently he's got these kennels.
They had a very big spread.
They probably had
They had a landing strip, kennels, big mansion.
Very significant.
Yeah, it was a place.
residence, right. And said he found them dead. He called 911, seemingly distraught. Said, found them again out at my kennels. Says that it's bad that neither his wife or his son were breathing. This is all from the 911 call. And, you know, asked the emergency responders to hurry. Was asking, hey, are they close, right? They arrived, told them that him and his son, Paul, had been getting threats. This is what he told law enforcement upon arrival, that they've been getting threats because of a fatal boat wreck. Paul is the son who's deceased. A fatal boat wreck that the son had been involved in a few years earlier. And this is where, again, as I mentioned, this story is kind of like a collection of just seemingly random stories that need to be talked about
and
to try to figure out what happened here.
Pretty
right?
popular girl was killed in that wreck, and it was a big scandal down there.
So that's you know, a detour from the story. What does all this mean? So he tells the police that Paul had been
getting death threats.
Been death threats. Several years prior, I think this is in, I'm trying to get the year. 2000, I don't know, a few years prior at
prior,
any rate.
Right.
His son had been out boating.
Drinking.
This 2019. And was charged with drunkenly crashing the boat in an incident that unfortunately took the life of one of the 19-year-old passengers. It sounds like they didn't find her body until quite some time after this accident.
Right.
In the water, maybe miles from where the accident happened.
And already, I mean, immediately the buzz around town was, he's a Murdoch.
Yes.
He's going to walk. And sure enough.
Yep. And Paul Murdoch was facing charges of boating under the influence.
Tried to pin it on his friends.
Death, right?
And yeah, it was.
Basically like a criminal vehicular homicide or something like that that we'd have in the state of Minnesota, right? Or some sort of manslaughter type offense. So he tells, that's his initial alibi. That's the initial alibi upon law enforcement arriving as he's, you know, in his mind at least, trying to connect it to threats that he claims that they had been receiving in connection with the son's involvement in that accident. And again, it goes for maybe a year where law enforcement's trying to investigate this thing. and figure out what really happened. Now, in the middle of this, and this is where this is just another random, I guess, story that's involved here. Alex Murdoch himself was shot. You remember this part of the story?
No, I don't. I don't remember.
You don't remember this? Oh, this gets better. This gets better.
So 3 months now after his wife and son die, after he says, you know, maybe it has something to do with this criminal prosecution of my son. 3 months after that, his law firm discovered a check, right? Check for money, supposedly addressed to the firm, but was instead made out to Mr. Murdoch. They thought that was weird. Supposed to be firm money. We find this check. It's addressed to Mr. Murdoch. We now have what's going on here with some financial stuff. Seems worth our time in investigating it. They do. They, in essence, discover what they believe was evidence of financial wrongdoing. They ask Alex Murdoch for his resignation, and apparently he gave it. So he resigns from the firm. And the next day, September 4th of 2021, now this is to keep our timeline straight. He was jailed in October of 2021 for these financial crimes. This is all pre-indictment on the murders. The month prior, September 4th, 2021, he claimed he had been shot in the head on the side of a rural road by someone as he was changing a tire. So he says, I get a flat tire. How often does that happen, by the way? I mean, I don't think I've ever changed a flat tire on the side of the road. Have you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is that like a common light? That can't
more
be.
More than
that,
one. Yeah,
you'd think a multimillionaire would have, you know, AAA or whatever.
That's what I mean. So, and I'm just thinking
I've
about
changed,
it.
But, okay.
He says he's doing it. Yeah.
Minding my own business.
Doesn't have AAA. Yeah. Maybe he does. Not going to use it. You know, he's got apparently an airstrip on the yard, you think. But
yeah, he does.
He's going to change his own tire. Hey, I can appreciate and respect that. Yeah. And he says while he's doing that innocent task, someone just comes and apparently shoots him in the head. Claimed he had been shot on the head on a rural roadside, taken to the hospital, and of course his story, everyone agrees, quickly fell apart. It turned out that he wasn't even alone on the side of the road. You know, turns out there's a third party with him that he hadn't disclosed, his third party being a distant cousin named Curtis Edward Smith. Turns out his cousin is with him. And then soon he admitted that actually he had just asked Mr. Smith to shoot him in the head.
Yeah, his opiate deal.
Mr. Murdoch's lawyers said he had come up with a plan to make his suicide look like a murder because he thought it would help the surviving older son, Buster, collect his life insurance policy. So he basically admits to insurance fraud.
Yeah,
right?
But I was high.
Medical records show he had been shot in the back of the head, but he had been able to call for help afterwards. And Murdoch issued a statement apologizing, said he was entering rehab for an addiction to painkillers. So that's his reaction to having this whole thing fall apart. That incident ends with the arrest of both Murdoch and his cousin charged with aggravated assault. Well, that's curious. I'm going to take a detour here. Aggravated assault. I mean, I haven't read the charging doc, even if that's an assault on Murdoch. I mean, consent is a defense. Well, to assault, but at any rate.
Even if he was doing it as a favor, it's still aggravated assault.
Maybe. I'd have to look at the elements, but if you tell me to punch you in the face and I do it,
yeah. I know, but if you're asking somebody to shoot somebody, that's I'm pretty sure you can't do
probably,
that, right?
No, you're right. Had you actually succeeded, okay, assisted suicide probably is a crime in South Carolina, but are you immune from an assault charge? I don't know.
But
I'm
what we're believing aloud. Is, look, just you know? Graze me so I can call the cops and say, look, the murderer's still out there.
Yeah. Anyway, so he gets charged with aggravated assault. Oh, assisting in a suicide attempt. Apparently, that's a crime out there. It's not just assisted suicide, but even assisting in an attempt and insurance fraud. He had told the New York Times that he didn't shoot Mr. Murdoch and that the gun had gone off as he grabbed Mr. Murdoch's arm to stop him from shooting himself. Anyway, so that's what they're saying. God. Mr. Murdoch turned himself in September 16, was charged with insurance fraud, conspiracy to commit insurance fraud, filing a false police report again, all felony offenses. In July of 2022, they were indicted on other conspiracy charges related to money laundering. Again, this is with his cousin.
Let me just point out this whole list that you're providing here.
Yeah.
I keep going back to where you were square one. that the spokes come off the wheel at this certain level. There's a lot of spokes that have come off here.
Oh.
All these instances are a spoke.
I mean, the spokes are off. The doors are off.
We haven't even gotten to the maid yet.
It's just like a car frame with nothing attached to it anymore, skidding across the highway.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's what it seems like. But and then, okay, kind of related, probably related. Who knows? I don't know. 2019, Mr. Murdoch, his housekeeper died. Worked as a nanny and a housekeeper. Was with the family for more than 20 years. Now, I don't think there's any allegation that there was like...
Yeah, there is.
Is there? Okay, yeah, maybe. I don't know. At least not that I've read, but there could be. I guess given the totality of everything else, your natural inclination is at least to think, well, was there funny business going on there too?
Yeah, there's a lot of thought about that.
She died at an injury, I mean, as a result of an injury sustained at the home. Now, this is where I'm wondering, was there other funny business here? Because she didn't die immediately. It took several weeks, and was she communicative? Was she talking?
No, I don't think so. She was walking up the stairs to come to work. She stepped on the dog. She fell backwards, hit her head. Murdoch claims, I was home, I went out, held her in my arms, and she whispered her last words to me, it was the dog. And so that's literally what happened. Well, he says, you know what, it's my house, I'm going to sue myself so I can provide for her children and husband, because I'm the hero, and of course, they'll come on. We haven't seen a cent.
So this is where...
But, of course, there were whispers around town. He got drunk or high and mad and shoved her, you know. Who knows?
Yeah. So then here's where things kind of get goofy. If they haven't got goofy already. After her funeral, Mr. Murdoch introduced her two adult sons. So Nanny has two adult sons. Introduced them to a lawyer who he said would help them resolve the issues around their mother's death. And in a recent lawsuit, the sons said that they did not know the lawyer, who apparently is this guy, Corey Fleming, was a close friend of Mr. Murdoch. Mr. Fleming reached a $4.3 million settlement with Mr. Murdoch and his insurers. Mr. Murdoch has insurance, obviously, in the property. Someone apparently slips, falls, dies. Okay. There's a claim there. Apparently, it settled for $4.3 million. And it doesn't sound like that they ever saw any of the money. They never got any of it. So that claim settles. Everyone agrees the money's paid. Sons never see it. And so I think he's also charged in connection with these missing funds.
Okay.
It's probably mixed up one of the financial crimes of apparently many or several that comprised his criminal prosecutions.
But again, like with his son in that drunk boating, lots and lots of whispering going on around town.
So, yeah, I mean, so what to make of all this? I mean, I think that's the gist of it. Here, this is another thing. It's referenced in this article. Apparently, no connection, but is there a connection? June of 2021, a few weeks after the death of the nanny. No, I'm sorry, of Maggie. That's his wife and Paul Murdoch. South Carolina law enforcement announced that it was opening a new inquiry into the death of a gentleman named Stephen or Stephen Smith, a 19-year-old, whose body was found about 10 miles from Murdoch's home. Now, they haven't indicated there's any connection to Murdoch, but just the timing of everything.
Mm.
It's a 2015 death. They're now reopening it in the context of investigating Murdoch. What to make of that? Who knows? Who knows? And what to make of any of this, really?
Yeah,
but so, theory of criminal prosecution. You know, what does all this mean in terms of, does it help us show that Murdoch, in fact, murdered his wife and son? That's, you know, really the question.
And again, it comes down to he embezzled multi-millions of dollars from his law firm.
Yeah.
And it's like, what'd you do with it, Alex? That's a lot of opioids. $9 million worth, what'd you do with it? And I think they still don't know. But the prosecution's claim, wasn't it, that he killed the wife and son to make himself look more sympathetic or to take the spotlight off of him, per se?
Mm-hmm.
That look on top of everything else the poor guy's dealing with.
Yes. Well, that it was a weird, misguided attempt.
Which sounds a little thin, but...
to conceal his own financial crimes. To do the... Okay. I mean, I think the state's theory of prosecution is, in essence, that this whole thing is collapsing on him. His family is about to be about to learn that he's been involved in some pretty significant financial crimes, and the focus is going to be on him. It's going to involve all sorts of media attention, scrutiny, prosecution, investigations, who knows? And this is an awkward attempt to
shift things away from him.
Yeah. Shift it away.
Which, again,
to gain sympathy, and who wants to talk about all these financial crimes if my wife and my son were just brutally murdered at a property?
And I'm addicted to drugs.
And I'm addicted to drugs.
Feel
and
sorry it's, for me.
To create some narrative that somehow helps him.
Now, let's say that's 100% true. Can you imagine? What amount of narcissism does it require?
I'm not... It still doesn't make sense.
This,
but
my God.
This cacophony of events and circumstances, and as we call them, spokes coming off the wheel.
I mean, these people are
all of these things. I mean, is it really?
These people are just plain nuts.
That killing his son and wife is an attempt at distraction.
Yeah,
seems almost ridiculous.
Yeah, it's kind of a thin theory.
I mean, you can't, like, write more interesting stories. There's some stuff you just can't make up, and that clearly just falls into this category.
And again, that son who was murdered was bad news. Drunk, mean.
Right.
Just rich kid running wild, drugs, drinking. You know, the night of that boat wreck they show in the documentary, he's whispering to the cop, "It was my friend who was driving."
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
So I knew when I decided to talk about this topic on the podcast, it probably generate very little discussion regarding the actual law, right? We could spend this
whole
time
just discuss. I mean,
so here's the piece I'm going to leave you with, and I think this is probably going to be a significant issue on appeal, and that's this. This judge allowed, again, we're talking Alex Murdaugh is on trial for murdering two people, his son and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think at that trial there deserves to be a place for evidence of the financial crimes? Should that evidence come in at the trial for the murder of his son?
Well,
and
if
his
it's
wife?
The, if it's the prosecution's theory as to motive,
well, that's what we're going to talk about.
You know,
right?
Because I mean, that's what, again, Kevin said it was thin, but if that's the theory that this was meant as some sort of a distraction for the financial woes, then absolutely it should be admissible. Is that the reason the judge allowed all of that?
Well, so it came in, yeah. Spoiler, it actually came in. So and it wasn't an issue that wasn't... There are some issues in cases that you're really not going to get to the merits of until you're actually having a trial on it. You know what I mean? We're talking about the admissibility of evidence here. You know, in my practice in Minnesota, traditionally, there's a pretrial process, you know, where you're challenging the use of certain evidence. But oftentimes you don't get a determination until you're pretty close to ushering in your prospective jurors and starting voir dire and picking a jury. This determination, when did we say this trial actually started? It was in January. It wasn't until, I think, February. And don't quote me on this. I think this is true based on the timeline I'm looking at least, that the judge made a ruling on this piece of evidence. Any rule that can come in. This is in quotes. The judge stated, "I find that the jury is entitled to consider whether the apparent desperation of Mr. Murdaugh because of his dire financial situation and threat of being exposed for committing the crimes of which he was later charged with resulted in the commission of the alleged crime." So he thinks the jury is entitled to consider whether those acts of desperation resulted in the commission of the alleged crime. While motive is not a necessary element, the state must prove malice, and evidence of motive may be used to prove malice. So then I thought, wow, is malice an element of that crime? I got a copy of the indictment here. There's actually two of them.
Yeah, two
this
dead
is what
bodies.
It looks like. It's a single-page document. This is the actual indictment. There's two that are basically identical. I only got one.
And that's a paragraph.
They're only different with respect to the name of the person that lost their life. This is it. At a court of general sessions convened on July 14, 2022, the grand jurors of, is it Colleton County, present upon their oath murder. That's what it says. That on or about June 7, 2021, the defendant Richard Alexander Murdaugh did kill another person with malice aforethought.
Okay.
I don't know how out in South Carolina they're defining malice aforethought, but connecting it back to this judge's evidentiary ruling, he's saying, well, motive exactly. It doesn't, you know, motive. They don't have to prove a certain motive here, but they got to prove malice. And motive goes to malice. There's all this, not just evidence of financial crimes. I mean, he's like literally being prosecuted for it. And there's a connection, maybe.
Well, it seems like there
to the
has
state's
been,
theory of prosecution.
There has been an enormous effort to create a possible motive for this crime. But what did the forensic evidence show? At least in the media, it seems like we've heard very little about forensic evidence and physical evidence at the scene that would link him to these murders.
And people who would say, well, what's he have in his favor? No blood on him. And he had two people were blown to pieces. No weapon. No shells were found. Still haven't been found.
Well, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, there's
always questions with any situation like this.
We could spend hours going through all this stuff. You know, I get the sense at least one of the bigger problems he had, other than obviously all these other financial crimes
and the lies,
a clear demonstration of his inability to tell the truth. But yeah. There was a cell phone video. He had originally told investigators that
I wasn't there.
Was it at the kennels? And then they find, I think it was on the deceased son's phone, a video.
Yep. And you hear his voice.
Timestamp, and you hear a voice.
And he says, no, that wasn't me.
And then he admitted that later. he lied about it. And his explanation for lying, of course, conveniently wasn't.
I was high.
Yeah, it was, oh, I was just on drugs and I was paranoid.
So that in itself, though, does not prove that.
Yeah, that's true.
That he committed these murders.
No,
right?
And I mean, and that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, you're right. And you can convict people on circumstantial evidence. So,
It didn't take them very long to.
It didn't even take them long to.
So it seems like, the forensic part of it, at least, by what you sense with the jury, and maybe we need to hear from the jurors themselves on how a decision like this was made so quickly.
Yeah.
Was 3 hours? Is that what you said it was?
3 hours, Leon.
I mean, judges always give, at least here, where I try cases, jurors are given instructions. There's and there's always an example given of circumstantial and direct evidence, right? Direct evidence is just that. It's direct. It's, I saw.
Your fingerprints.
They always use the snow example.
Yep.
Footprints in the snow. Someone says, yeah, I saw the guy walking in the snow. Direct evidence, right?
Yep.
Contrast that with, I saw footprints in the snow. In both instances, you're trying to prove a man walked in the snow.
But no one saw me walking in the snow.
Right, because he got the footprints. So that's circumstantial evidence, and that's still evidence. And it's up to a jury to determine how much of it reaches the threshold of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a question for them to answer. You know, so there's no direct evidence here exactly. It's not like anyone's saying, I saw him shoot his wife and son, you know. It's a bunch of snow footprints, but a lot of them.
So
right?
What does, and what I also found very interesting is how quickly sentencing came down, just basically the next day, right? The sentencing happened the next day.
Was he sentenced already? I didn't even get to that point.
Yeah, two life sentences.
Life in prison.
Oh, yeah.
So what does an Alex Murdaugh appeal look like?
Well, I think it's going to probably focus on,
because it'll happen, right?
Well, you know, the evidentiary rulings, the financial crime pieces of this, are going to say that so wholly tainted the jury's ability to reach a, impartial, fair verdict on the murder charges that the whole process needs to be redone.
Boy, they
argue sufficiency of the evidence.
You think a talented defense team could mount something here? You would think so. I mean, there's...
Well, they'll mount something.
I mean, there was documents. I mean, there were death threats against that son. He made himself a lot of enemies.
Yeah.
Like you said, circumstantial. You can always poke holes in that.
You know, if you're Alex Murdaugh, or really anyone, in a charge with a high-profile thing, and you get convicted, patiently waiting and watching your jurors and their behavior, we all know sometimes can be conveniently a source of an issue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They love to talk.
Yeah.
They love to say these high profile things that can't help themselves, which leads me to something else I want to talk about, which I decided it wouldn't be a good topic now. I don't think it's ripe yet. And that's this Georgia grand jury foreperson who was on this grand jury investigating potential criminal wrongdoing in the 2020 election. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
I think most attorneys are watching these interviews of her and cringing. Did she do anything wrong? Did she not? I don't know. This is going to be a good topic on a podcast, but it's not ripe yet. It's not ripe. We got to see what happens.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's what's interesting about this business that you're in.
Yeah.
There's always something happening somewhere.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, this whole deal. I mean, there's one other thing we didn't mention. The oldest son, who was in the courtroom every day, you kept seeing him on camera. He is somewhat suspected in the murder of a local gay man who was found run down on the side of the road.
Was that the thing I just mentioned from 2015?
Or was that the drunk driving? Or is that must have been the
too many things.
Okay,
I don't know.
That must have been the 2015.
They reopened an investigation into the death of somebody that was found 10 miles from the house.
Yes. And the attorney, he was a local gay man, and there were whispers. Well, he had feelings for the oldest son. Well, the oldest son wasn't going to have that. So without naming again, couldn't prove it.
If it doesn't,
found run. I don't know if his last phone call was to the oldest son. Next, they find the guy run down on the side of the road or whatever. I can't. You can watch it on Netflix. It's fascinating.
We didn't even. Yeah, this thing. Made it to the fourth generation. Imagine it couldn't even make it to the fifth. The fifth had already unraveled, as we just saw.
Was it just a generation as generation goes along? There was too much power. There was too much.
Yeah, I mean,
doing whatever you wanted and no consequences, and acting with total immunity, and you know, it just kind of snowballed eventually to where it got way too out of hand.
Way out of hand.
So again, you go back and watch that. Then with the second that girl died in that drunk boating accident, right away the town, he's going to get away with it. He's a Murdoch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. But two life sentences, so they got him.
What a very bizarre story.
Boy, it's a lot to digest. But,
it is.
But again, yeah, we were talking in our TV Tonight segment earlier. Both 2020 and Dateline tonight will be dedicated to to this. So
I was worried I wouldn't even be able to. I was worried we wouldn't have enough to talk about on it over 30, 40 minutes of this podcast. And
then we could easily keep going. I mean,
how do you even clearly tell the story in 30 minutes? I think we did an okay job tonight.
I think so.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, from what you would you have voted guilty?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Again, it's a.
I haven't.
It's
I haven't,
thin. The motive
I
is
I wasn't
thin.
A juror. I didn't hear the testimony. I didn't evaluate it. It seems, at least from my vantage and in reading everything I can about it, that there was certainly overwhelming evidence indicative of guilt. But
was there, though? You know?
I maybe would have thought about it for more than 3 hours.
Well, one of the jurors spoke out today and said, well, he was too much the lawyer on the stand. Every question, every answer came right away, and everything he knew what to say, and everything was so rehearsed, and...
But of course,
thinking that's not that was admission of guilt. Though.
Thinking that was going to be well, he said that, and he said that in the cell phone. That's what sealed it for us.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
I mean,
3 hours.
Evidently, you were there. What were you doing there?
And it's as you've brought up before too, that we can watch a trial on television or watch coverage of a trial, through the press, but it's an entirely different thing to sit in a jury box and watch it. Right in front of you.
Yeah.
It's a different experience, and I've done it a couple of times, so it's very interesting and very powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bottom line is this is probably far from over.
Yeah, there's going to be an appeal and maybe a whole nother podcast worth of content as a result. There you go.
All right. Keep us posted.
And what did OJ have to say again?
I don't know why everyone thinks I'm the expert. Two people murdered, three hours deliberating.
OJ, what he thought it.
Why does everyone think I'm the expert? All right, Andrew, how can people get a hold of you?
Northlandlawyers.com. Check out our website. You'll see that I practice in all areas of criminal defense. So at Olson, Poole, and Enval, we're happy to talk about any injury concern. Hope you're not injured, but if you are, we can help you out. Workers' compensation, social security, disability, or family law. Need to get northlandlawyers.com.
All right, Trainwreck Court Podcast, iHeart, we're 95kqds.com. Wherever you get your podcast, please give us a like, and do please subscribe. All right, thank you very much.
All
Andrew Poole, Tom Robick, I'm Kevin Key. Thank you, everybody.
Yep, see you guys.